We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You're listening to Free For All from the Wall Street Journal. Coming up.
Coming up on this episode of the Free For All, just football. Football, man. That's all we're talking about. Football, football, football. Coaches that are getting sacked. Teams that are making the playoffs. Who's going to be in the Super Bowl? We'll talk a little bit about the halftime show. Coldplay, does it make any sense whatsoever? My guess, football maestros Kevin Clark and John Clegg of the Wall Street Journal.
Spend lots of time on your device. Then spend some of that time with us. WSJ Podcasts, the sound of success. Now, here's Jason Gay.
This is Free For All, and it's our first pod of 2016. And, you know, the idea of the Free For All was going to be sports plus. We were going to do some sports. We were going to talk about some other things happening in the world, some fun stories in the journal that occur in other sections, bring on some people that, if you're a sports follower, you might not necessarily follow. But today, we're sports only, and specifically football only, because the playoff picture is set. It's Bloody Monday, too, where all the coaches get the axe, or the underperforming coaches get the axe. And joining me are two of the great football voices of our civilization. Football columnist Kevin Clark.
Hello.
And his colleague, friend,
boss.
Mentor.
Boss. Admirer.
Boss,
admirer.
John Clegg, who That's is me. A football writer himself and has chronicled everything from the college game to the New York football Giants. Let's just start with Bloody Monday. Who's out already? We know that Mike Pettine
of the Browns, his boss, Ray Farmer, the general manager.
They were out last night.
As was Jim Tomasula of the 49ers. It's become Bloody Sunday night now.
Wasn't it Black Monday? Have we changed it to Bloody Monday?
Yeah, it was Black. It is Black Monday.
Okay,
but no
sorry.
One's been fired. The only person fired today is the Real Madrid coach.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Replaced by Zidane, right?
Zidane,
that's, that happens every Monday.
Oh, that's such a great idea. What could go wrong, Zidane? Coaching Real Madrid. But who's next?
Who's next? Well, Mike McCoy, I thought it was very funny. There was a report this morning that Mike McCoy may be safe, or it might be that the Chargers are so desperate to move to Los Angeles that they've basically forgotten to fire their coach, which is a possibility.
That is also today, right? The applications for
right.
LA
but we know
due.
That. So then the decision is made in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So the Spanos family is busy putting that process together,
right.
And they may not know who the coach is right now. Like, who's that guy? Oh, he's the coach. Oh, we'll fire him next week.
Right.
So that's the sort of thing. And the other thing is, what's the point of even hiring a coach right now? Because the draw is going to be L.A. If you're going to get a Sean Payton, if you're going to get a Nick Saban, it's going to be because they want to move into Carson with the Chargers. So
that's a dumb question. They're looking basically at two teams next year for L.A. Is that correct? It's
unless
likely be
the
two.
Rams win a solo bid.
Okay. But where are they going to play?
Coliseum, the Rose Bowl. There was one thing
the
I don't
Rose
know.
Rose Bowl.
Can I drop?
I mean,
can
right.
I drop? A
I
nugget?
Get the sentimental appeal of it, but it is not a modern stadium. Neither is the Coliseum.
I'm going to drop a nugget, a news nugget
oh,
that
yeah,
I've never written
do.
Before. This is not going to happen, but it's one thing that was presented to the NFL, an idea that they would play the games at the Galaxy Stadium,
in the little
capacity,
oh, I love that.
30,000,
yeah,
and then only. What you would do then is you would only let in like the premium people who are going to have the boxes. Okay,
yeah.
So there's 30,000, right? So you play in the Galaxy Stadium, you have only rich people, and then the remaining 40,000 people can come when the stadium is.
Those people aren't renowned for cheering wildly and making a bunch of noise. Though that would be a kind
they
of strange
can,
atmosphere.
Well, they can keep some of the MLS fans in there.
I think it was Wired magazine did something about future of sport in which they actually theorized that this kind of thing was going to happen. More broadly, that the new trend towards stadiums would be much smaller, intimate, expensive. I mean, not that they're not expensive as crazy now, but that you could
even go more intimate, more expensive.
Stadiums don't need to be more than 40,000 seats.
True.
Like the European
What's
soccer stadiums.
What's the biggest EPL stadium? Yeah, it's
like Arsenal. I guess Old Trafford is like 80,000, okay. but the majority of them are 40,000, 50,000.
Right. I mean, you don't Spurs, need to be if you're Spurs, in a stadium that's a rocking 25,000 person stadium, you never say, you know, it'd be great, 50,000 more people in here. Never.
Right. I agree. I think that the intimate stadiums makes
And we know
sense.
from London, I mean, Crystal Palace is probably the loudest stadium in London, or maybe Upton Park, and those are, 20, 30,000. Then you go to Arsenal, and you could hear a pin drop.
All right, guys, this is not Men in Blazers. meanwhile, as we do this, I believe over in the Meadowlands, the Maras... There's a meeting going on with the New York Football Giants and their... head coach of the last 12 years, Tom Coughlin. John, you covered the Giants.
I did.
It just feels like the inevitable that Coughlin is going to resign. It won't be some ugly firing, but do you believe that's what's going to happen here?
Yeah, I feel that there will be a parting of ways. I'm not sure exactly how they will present it in terms of resigning, retiring. This definitely feels like this is the end for Tom Coughlin.
How did you find him as a subject to cover in the time that you covered the Giants?
I found him to be very fair in his dealings with the media, and I actually developed a lot of respect for the way he coaches and leads his team.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't really give much away during the season, but in the off season, he's like very interesting, charming person to talk to.
Like if you ran into him and had a drink with him in the middle of
March. Oh, yeah. No, he's great. And and at all those NFL meetings outside the season, he's a joy to talk to. He will, you know, happily, you know, expound about various aspects of the game and, and his sort of thoughts on modern football and the way the game is headed and all that sort of thing. During the season, he's a complete closed book and, you know, basically a nightmare for a reporter to deal with,
but there is a softer side.
And you know that he's not. He doesn't talk to anyone, so you don't have to worry about that. He's giving stuff to this outlet and not this outlet. Or anything.
Where does he? What's the fair assessment of his Giants tenure? Because I look at it as a Patriots fan and say, like, I mean, are you kidding me? He won two of the most epic Super Bowl victories of all time against these incredibly favored Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, Patriot teams, including an undefeated one. How can he not be considered a great football coach and yet has not made the playoffs since that last Super Bowl title and, you know, some very erratic...
He only made the playoffs one out of the last seven seasons. It's a very unique record. It's very hard to to put him
it's
in...
It's not a dozen years of
context.
Greatness.
No. It's like 2 years of greatness and two sort of good years.
I don't think that necessarily matters. I mean, what did Joe Gibbs do in the years he wasn't winning Super Bowls? I don't know. That's the point. And so no one looks at it and says, oh, he didn't win that many NFC East titles. No one cares.
Right.
They care about Super Bowls. I don't know what Bill Parcells did.
I think
in December,
Giants fans cared a lot. I mean, every year it seemed there was a drumbeat of some kind to remove
Coughlin.
Would
you rather have the two Super Bowls or consistent December?
Existential question of like, look, you're going to get a coach. He's going to come for a dozen years, and you're going to win two amazing Super Bowls. Are you going to take it? There's other than New England or maybe Pittsburgh, there's no franchise that would not take that.
Look at Cincinnati. They make the playoffs every year, and they lose the first game. Right. I mean, what fate would you rather have? The game is about glory.
And the other thing about those Giant victories is that the Giants have all this preceding great history, too, of the Parcells Giants and those Super Bowl wins. But I almost feel that these Coughlin wins are a level above that because of the competition.
And because the crazy thing is that in both those years they won the Super Bowl, they barely squeaked
into
the playoffs.
They were these raggedy teams.
So it's not even like the teams that the years that he won the Super Bowl, his teams were juggernauts that went, they could easily have missed the playoffs in those years.
What does he do? I always think of the Giants as having their act together and, you know, engineering the graceful exit, although that's not always the case. But that, you know, do you think he goes upstairs and he has some sort of like emeritus job? Like what is it? What happens?
No, I think that because the Giants like to keep their general manager and coach separate. You know, the general manager at the Giants doesn't hire the coach.
And Jerry Reese is staying.
Jerry Reese is staying, by all accounts. So, I think Coughlin will walk away. I'm sure that they will, laud him in his, you know, farewell ceremony, and he'll be inducted into the Giants Ring of Honor, you know, September 2016.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I think it will be a clean break.
Is it a desirable job, Kevin?
Yes.
I mean, you look at it, it's like Eli is how old? What, 33?
32. Yeah.
So still has theoretically at least, you know, 3 to 6 productive years left. You have the best wide receiver in the game. You have, you know, a defense that has some glaring issues and some losses to deal with in the offseason, but it's got to be up there.
Yeah, so my general thought on the Giants job, it's one of maybe 5, 6, 7 jobs where you know the owner is going to give you full autonomy. He's not going to, in the draft room, say, well, I really like this guy. He's just going to sit there and make sure that decisions are made that are correct. You know, I did a story a couple years ago where I interviewed the top owners of the teams that are successful every single year. And the number one thing I found from the Krafts, the Rooneys, Bisciotti, is they're in the room for big decisions, but they don't make big decisions. And the Maras are exactly like that. If they're signing Eli to a contract extension, Mara's going to be on the side of the room just making sure that everything's being thought through. But he's going to give the final decision to the coach and the GM. And I don't think people realize how important that is, because 25 owners in the NFL love to involve themselves in football operations. So Sean Payton, who's got a murky ownership situation in New Orleans right now, who knows who will own the team in 1 or 2 years, he would love to be there.
Right. It's not just that they give you the final decision. They're also going to give the new coach probably 5 years to try and coach the team. You know,
there is a consistency and not a rapid fire button. Is it a more desirable job than, you know, it still belongs to Chuck Pagano, but is it a more desirable job than Indianapolis?
Yes.
It is.
Yeah. Would you rather work for Mara or Jim Irsay?
Well, that's a very good question. But in luck, you have, you know, a much younger potential Hall of Fame quarterback. So,
but I mean, first of all, luck.
I think that the situation...
lacerated kidneys. That's a pretty bad injury. Yeah. I don't understand.
Lacerated kidneys. Come on.
I mean, I think he's been beaten up because of the poor offensive line and the poor offense they put around him, to the point that I'm worried about his long-term health. I'm worried, quite frankly, about him staying with the team. Andrew Luck is smart enough to look at his team and say, okay, they can control me through the franchise tag or whatever, but I'm going to get $150 million no matter where I go. Why not go to a team that's going to be stable?
When was the last time a franchise quarterback, like, willingly departed his team?
Carson Palmer,
yeah, Drew Brees. I mean, you mean willingly?
Drew Brees was traded.
No, he was.
He wasn't.
He was
well,
a free
no,
agent.
But he wasn't. No.
He was pushed
willingly
out by Rivers.
No,
I understand that.
Right. I have a bugaboo about something, which is, I don't get the whole deal with how obsessed people appear to be, and maybe this is just Twitter, and I'm spending too much time on social media. Yes.
Almost certainly.
How crazed people are about the Cleveland situation and how obsessed people are with, oh, who's going to be the next Browns coach? Who's going to be the next GM? Who's going to be the next... Like, it can be anybody. They're going to be what they always are, which is this underachieving sad sack franchise. And the reason why people are getting all this information is that they're very leaky, obviously, at the top. The owner is talking to everyone, presumably. And why would you want to enter a situation like that? Is there any desirability factor to the Browns?
No, except to be the person who saved the Browns. You know,
I mean, that's always been the sell.
But I remember a couple, maybe like 10 years ago, that there was a whole thing about the Red Sox before they won the World Series. So obviously it was longer than 10 years ago. But that every GM and every manager wanted to be the person who delivered the championship to Boston.
But the Red Sox would make it to the ALCS championship. They would, like, make the playoffs rather consistently.
If you're Chip Kelly and you have this huge ego, don't you want to be the guy who said, I won with the Browns?
The last Cleveland coach to win a playoff game,
Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
If Bill Belichick
also
couldn't win a Super Bowl with the Browns.
He's the winningest Browns coach since 1988. Marty Schottenheimer had a few more wins than he did.
Wow.
No, quite a few more. I mean,
yeah,
he was a very successful Browns coach by contrast.
Right.
Okay, the other one I'm hearing a lot of, obviously we lost your buddy Jim Thomasulla.
Yeah.
In the 49. What was the article you wrote about him?
It was about how He was giving every 30 minutes, just giving players 10-minute phone breaks.
Okay, so it didn't really work.
Well, I don't know if the phone breaks were the straw that broke the camel's back, or that was the rash of retired players. Regression of Colin Kaepernick, starting Blaine Gabbert, not having Patrick Willis anymore. I think there were some issues there. But yes, the phone breaks were completely to blame.
Is there a Kevin Clark curse? Is that what I'm starting to wonder after this year? Because let's go down the road here.
So I wrote about Josh Norman. He's doing well.
Yes.
So there's two reasons why there might be. Number one is that if you're really, really good, I save the stories about you for the playoffs.
Yeah.
Okay. If it's like Odell Beckham, I wrote the left-handed Odell Beckham
and you cursed story. Him.
Right. Yeah. Well, no, it was that I looked at it and said, ooh, I can't save this for December 15th. They might be terrible by then. So I ran it immediately. So during the regular season, I'm a clearinghouse. I'm just getting these stories out because who knows how long they're going to be relevant. Okay. The other thing is, it's self-fulfilling prophecy. If a coach or GM gives me an hour, why did he give me an hour? Because he's not doing very well. Bill Belichick is not giving me an hour. So it's in the off season and in training camp, I would say that it's probably related, the fact these guys are sitting down with me and telling me about their strategies.
And Chip Kelly also.
I wrote about Chip Kelly.
And he apparently is interested in the 49ers, John.
Yeah.
That's what we're hearing.
I would also say that I tend to write about things that are different, and I'm not totally, sure.
I just like the idea of a plain old Kevin Clark curse.
Yeah, that's no.
I think everybody on the NFL should be on notice.
I've thought about this. Because
if Kevin Clark comes to you in the regular season, you are in trouble.
If I come to you on October 3rd, it means you're about to be fired.
Thomas Hill, he got such a... I mean, before it was this like, oh, he's the quirky hire. He's the guy who relates to the players. And, you know, he lived under a bridge once. And now all the things, the quirky
lived in
factor.
His car, not under a bridge.
I know, but you know how it goes. You know,
he
all
once
this,
parked under a bridge.
He drove a car under a bridge. All the things that made him this idiosyncratic hire now are being raised as red flags. And we should have seen it coming. And what were they thinking?
Yeah.
That's how it goes, I guess.
That's how it goes. I mean, you know, Mark Bowden wrote this amazing book called Bringing the Heat about the early 90s Eagles. And the funniest thing is about the media was that they just collect all of your quirks, all of your anecdotes, all of your strategies.
Right.
And then at the end of the year, they decide if they were good strategies or bad strategies.
Yes, of course.
And so that's it with Tom Sula, is that he would have been an inspired hire if they went 9-7. I would have been voting him for Coach of the Year.
But is it true that they have basically... subcontracted all the football decisions, like the in-game decisions, strategy decisions, to other guys, and the Tom Sula was essentially a cheerleader?
So, a little bit. They wanted to change the structure. So they had...
I want to know, did he have music in his earphones, or did he actually have, like, strategy?
So, the Niners had this guy named Parag Marathe, who came from the private equity world, very smart, was the team president. He's no longer the team president, but they wanted a structure that was essentially different from any other structure. It was not coach, GM, whatever. It was sort of an analytics-driven, you know, almost the way like Bain Capital runs it. So, and obviously private equity, the fields overlap. And so they were trying to change the structure a little bit. The Browns have tried to do that.
Yeah.
Joe Banner wanted a situation where the coordinators, he was the team president, the coordinators reported to him, not the coach. Yeah. My advice...
If the Browns are doing it.
Yeah, no, my advice is to do things... If you're going to be weird in very limited doses, and don't try to change the entire structure of the NFL franchise like these teams have done.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, because we have to go to our important commercial sponsors. And then when we get back, let's talk about the teams that actually still exist.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Tired of squinting at your phone? Give your eyes a rest and let your ears take over. WSJ Podcasts, the sound of success. Now, here's Jason Gay.
Here's Jason Gay.
That's me, here with Kevin Clark, John Clegg, talking some NFL football. Okay, guys, let's talk about the playoffs.
Yeah, it's here.
the thing that I always love is the,
nobody wants to play these guys right now.
Those teams. In the AFC...
Steelers.
I think it's the Chiefs.
I just did a radio hit 5 minutes before coming here, and I actually said the phrase, nobody wants to play the Seattle Seahawks. If you're the Vikings, you're worried right now.
Kind of a jaw dropper, though, yesterday at the University of Phoenix Stadium.
Yeah, well, I think that the Cardinals run their organization in a way that they are completely fine dropping that and letting the Seahawks think, here come the Seahawks,
getting all excited. I did like how they were like, yeah, we're losing a lot, and we just saw the Panthers go up 3 touchdowns. So.
Right.
Here comes Drew Stanton.
Yeah, see you later.
Hope you like Drew Stanton.
Like they were clearly not fully committed to the win. I like that.
Yeah.
But was there any statement there?
No. 2 weeks ago, the Seahawks lost to a terrible Rams team.
Yeah.
So, and that was a game they really, really needed. And
yeah.
So the Cardinals losing a game big in a situation where they weren't desperate, they didn't have to win anything, they pulled Carson Palmer. I don't read too much into that.
That said, I mean, how many NFC teams do you like better than the Seahawks to reach the Super Bowl?
I like the Arizona Cardinals.
Better than the Seahawks?
Yeah.
Wow.
And we just talked about this. Jason, Clegg and I were going through playoff possibilities because it obviously impacts my travel schedule. The Cardinals and the Seahawks will play in 2 weeks, and I would bet heavily if I bet on the Carolina Panthers.
You would.
Yes.
Wait a second. The Cardinals.
The Panthers. The Panthers and the Seahawks will play because the Seahawks are a 6 seed.
Right.
The Panthers
are
a 1 seed.
Right.
So I would bet on the Panthers in that situation. I think Panthers are miles better than the Seattle Seahawks.
Okay. Assuming things go according to seeding and you get a Cardinals-Panthers in Carolina, who do you like there?
I think pre-Honey Badger injury, I would take the Cardinals. I just don't think you can lose the most important player in your defense.
And he's gone?
He tore his ACL.
Yeah, that's right. He's out. But I think the Seahawks. I take the Seahawks in the Cardinals-Panthers matchup.
Clegg has been banging the Seahawks drum for 4 years. I remember
They've been in
No, he was early on the Seahawks, too, which I liked. He was early on the Seahawks in 2012, and now he's late on the Seahawks.
Well,
he is committed to the Seahawks, and I really like it.
Now, explain to me what happened yesterday in Miami. Because I don't really get what the Patriots did not. I mean, they were running, you know, on 3rd and 7, they were running quarterback draws repeatedly. They were not going to Gronkowski really at all. Miami played well.
Yeah.
But the Patriots did not really show much of anything. I felt my brother's a nut Patriot fan, and we were arguing about this. I feel like home field is home field. It exists for a reason. It's a good thing to have. And he was like thinking the Patriots were thinking of matchups and why the 2 seed was preferable.
Yeah,
clearly Bill Belichick wants Dan Campbell to get the Dolphins job.
Yeah, that's true.
On a full-time basis.
I just saw a report that the two people that the Dolphins have put in request to interview are both Patriots coordinators. So I think that Belichick knew what was going to happen.
Right.
Daniels, Patricia interview in there. I generally think that the Patriots look at matchups much more than anyone would think. You know, Dan Shaughnessy pointed out, I think it was Dan Shaughnessy, that Matt Castle basically threw the ball into the stands in 2008 just to get the Jaguars in the first round on a big possession. Yeah. So
was this about dodging the Steelers? Is that?
Yeah. I also think they probably lost to the Jets. They weren't throwing the game, but I don't know if they were putting their foot on the pedal because they would much rather have the Steelers out. Remember,
Patriots, that makes sense to me.
The Patriots came very close to losing to the Baltimore Ravens last year.
Those big
physical teams that could punch them in the mouth.
I think it makes perfect sense.
I think home field was a difference maker in that scenario.
Yeah, so was Julian Edelman's 80-yard touchdown pass. I mean, they lucked out. That was their biggest playoff comeback ever, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So those big physical teams, they can beat the Patriots.
Yes.
And so if I'm the Patriots, I'm a little bit worried about the Steelers lurking there.
Okay, so the Patriots will get, there's some up-for-grabs wild card games here. I mean, I can't call Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. Pittsburgh did not look fantastic yesterday. That's a tough one.
A.J. McCarron, you believe in him? I don't know.
I kind of
like AJ McCarron.
Yeah, I mean,
he's
a winner.
Just wins games.
Just win, baby.
And, he's already got his soul-crushing loss out of the way, right?
But he may have gotten hurt on that last possession as well.
Mm.
So I think that I think the Pittsburgh's going to win that game.
What do you do if you're Marv with your quarterback situation? Because Andy's like, my cast is coming off, guys. I'm ready.
Yeah.
It's Andy Dalton, though.
But he's got a broken thumb. I mean, someone was on the radio. There's a quarterback on the radio a couple weeks ago who broke his thumb during his career who said that you cannot overstate how much of an impact it has. It's not.
It's
a very huge injury for a guy. And so I would
And for a girl.
For a quarterback. For anybody, any gender who plays NFL quarterback. So, it's for me, I would probably go with McCarron. If he wins the game and he looks serviceable, the entire reason the Bengals are going to win is the defense and throwing the ball up to A.J. Green and handing off to the running game, okay? Mm-hmm. And so I think you can do that with anybody.
Okay. Yeah. These injury, you know, return prognoses they come up with, you need to add like at least 2, 3, 4 weeks to, you know, when the quarterback says, I could be back in 2 weeks to play, you know, 6 weeks is what you should
actually,
be expecting.
Well, actually, Clay, you know this as well as I do. If you go up to a player with any injury, they will tell you they're ready to go.
Yeah.
Because that's the culture, you know? I mean, there was a thing I remember talking to a Miami Dolphin during the Parcells regime who said that he used to see coaches go up to players and say, if we're not out of practice today, we're going to go in another direction. You know, this obviously wasn't the stars of the team, but this was low roster
remember
guys.
Remember how Parcells treated Terry Glenn when he coached the
Patriots?
Right, exactly.
Calling her.
Right.
She,
yeah. So everybody overstates.
It's funny to think about now. I mean, that was in press conferences.
That would never. I mean, can you imagine if someone did that now?
She's coming along. let's talk about
Denver.
Well, I want to get to Denver, but it's not a wild card round game yet. Are we agreeing that the Chiefs are going to beat the Texans? You know, that just has
maybe,
to happen. I mean,
maybe.
Andy's won 10 in a row.
Yeah.
Are the Chiefs awesome?
No.
10 in a row is 10 in a row.
I know. And they beat the Raiders twice in that spell as well. But I don't know. Alex Smith in the playoffs? I mean, we saw this a couple of years ago, and they blew it against
Andy
the Colts.
Andy Reid in the playoffs is the
right,
thing,
exactly.
Too. Yes. And then Green Bay at Washington. I really would like to see Green Bay win this game, but I don't know.
Are you joking me? You don't want a Redskins run? How funny that would be? Kirk Cousins, Dan Snyder,
they haven't
Gruden.
Beaten a winning team all year.
You're telling me that a Redskins run, everyone in Washington going crazy over the Redskins.
It's been a generation, and I just don't see it happening. I see them losing that game. I think Aaron Rodgers plays reasonably well. There you go.
I
keep waiting for the Packers to come back. Yeah. They're just not good, not really very good to watch. Even the Packers, they are not the Packers that we've
used to see. Dan Snyder's sadness.
I like to have a conversation, which is the most annoying dormant fan base, right? Like who, when they get good, is going to be the most annoying? And one of the weird theories I've heard is it's going to be the New York Islanders because there are a ton of Long Island guys who can't wait to be front runners for the Islanders, who saw the 70s Cups. Okay. I think it's the Washington Redskins. When the Redskins get good again, you will not believe the annoying people coming out of the woodwork. It is going to be hell on earth.
I think it's the New England
And it's going to be hilarious. Yeah, maybe. No, the Patriots are a great example. I mean, you could have gotten a ticket 15 years ago for any seat in the stadium, and now they're just this huge fan base that include Jason Gay.
Hey, here's my controversial question, which is, why isn't there a quarterback controversy in Denver? Peyton Manning's the quarterback now. Like, what? Like, why is it such a fait accompli? I didn't see enough out of Manning yesterday to say, oh, well, naturally, that's going to work perfectly well.
Do you remember the weird year when Aerosmith toured without Steven Tyler?
Like it was yesterday, Kevin.
No, it was like 4 years ago, and Steven Tyler left, and it was just Joe Perry playing the guitar or whatever. And then as soon as Steven Tyler wants to come back, you let him come back. That's it. I mean, I understand that maybe Brock looked marginally better, but I just feel like...
I mean, the line, he was 14-22 for 150 yards when he was yanked.
You give Peyton one last
ride. Didn't he turn the ball over
They turned the ball over a ton, yes.
You give him one last,
was a disaster.
One last ride. Yeah, that's what you give Peyton Manning, and you let him see if he can rekindle. You're not going to win a Super Bowl with Brock Osweiler.
Honestly, this made me so happy to see Peyton back. I cannot stand these people who have taken such joy in Peyton Manning looking so awful this season. After a guy that he's given us so much joy watching the NFL the last 20 years, I am thrilled to see Peyton Manning back. He definitely belongs as the starter. I hope that the Broncos...
Are they suddenly a better team? Are they, you know, do you give them more of an advantage with him, or is it kind of like a wash?
Well, I think the defense...
The defense is so good.
The defense is so good.
You watched that game yesterday, and it was all set up for the Chargers to win, and the defense just went...
I think if they can persuade Peyton to play the game manager, then he will be better at that than Brock Osweiler.
Well, I think
he can
has
get them
to.
Into the right plays, the right fronts, blah, blah, blah.
If you saw him trying to throw the ball 15 yards, you'll understand he's going to be, and he has been the last 3 years, Mr. 8 Yard Out. And that's great. And I think the things he's able to do with the line of scrimmage, checking into runs, I think that you can't put. Look, all
so
you
if
need
they
is 17
him
points.
To play within himself, I think they are better off with
all
Peyton Manning.
All you need is 17 points.
I think as soon as he sort of gets a little carried away and starts casting his mind back to 2012, 2011, you know, that's when Peyton Manning.
I want to see Belichick game plan for a hobbled and an old Peyton Manning. I think that would be fascinating.
I just don't think you can win a Super Bowl with that. I just don't think that, like, you know, if the idea is you're in this to win the whole thing, which presumably they are, I just don't see it. How is a guy who's considerably worse than the guy who got shackled completely by Seattle 2 seasons ago?
Well, their defense is significantly better.
The defense is significantly better. So what does that mean? They lose 23-7?
Well, or they win 13-9 or something. I don't know. I mean, I think they just have to rely on their defense to win the game.
All right. I want to take another quick break and then come back and we'll talk about some real Super Bowl L predictions.
Yeah.
Sit back, relax, and grab your earbuds. WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously. Now, here's Jason Gay.
The Super Bowl is February, is it the 8th? It's the
7th.
It's the 7th. Sorry, I'm looking at 2015. It's February 7th in Santa Clara.
Yeah.
At Levi's Stadium.
Yep.
How is that dump?
I've actually been to the stadium for practice and stuff. It's fine. It's just well out of the way. I think that it's going to be a nightmare. The media, the fans will be staying in downtown San Francisco.
Yeah.
All of the teams will be staying in San Jose and Santa Clara.
Yeah.
It's going to be long bus rides. Yeah. We're just not going to have a good time.
Well, I know if there's one thing the public cares about, it's the media and how quickly
those
they
bus
can
rides
come to and fro those practices. The halftime act, Clegg, your countryman.
Yes.
Coldplay.
A little very bit, safe choice. Very
a safe choice.
Yeah.
Do you think that I just don't think anyone is like shh everybody, hey, come on in, it's Coldplay's on.
No.
I don't think it has that Beyonce, Madonna, even Katy Perry
Prince
type buzz.
Yeah.
Prince.
Yeah, I know. No, it's instantly forgettable.
They need to go back to the geezers. There was this thing that happened, so after Janet Jackson,
yes,
the NFL went very much in the other direction, went after all the geezers. So you had The Who and Tom Petty, Paul McCartney. You had nobody who would take their shirt off, basically.
You must have missed Tom Petty.
and then Springsteen.
Yeah.
And then they basically that starts to hit a wall because you're running out of geezers. And also, I think, your advertisers are the ones who are paying for your halftime show. And so the guys who are with Pepsi Cola and Bridgestone, they're not getting that, we can get Electric Light Orchestra.
Right.
So you skew younger. But now they've hit a wall, and the only real remaining ones are Rihanna.
Yes. Would be down with Rihanna.
Timberlake, who's never done it solo.
No, I was at.
He's been on it.
I was at as a fan once Timberlake and NSYNC with Britney Spears and Aerosmith.
Yes,
with
and Aerosmith.
Steven, Steven Tyler.
No, that was like, they used to do more jamborees.
Yeah.
That was the one that got the whole thing shut down.
Yeah, Timberlake with Janet Jackson.
That was
No.
Timberlake
he's been a guest on several ones.
Right.
Yeah,
NSYNC was in Tampa.
Right. He's never been the guy himself.
Houston,
I'm confusing
Houston.
My Super Bowl halftime shows. How silly.
Is Maroon,
it was like 2 a.m. for you in England, right?
I can't believe I'm saying this out loud, but is Maroon 5 Super Bowl halftime?
I think
material? They're
on the same level as Coldplay. I think
they're certainly above Bruno Mars, though.
Yeah,
Bruno Mars proved to be really good.
Did anyone else think it was interesting that Bruno Mars was announced in the week of it was Red Hot Chili Peppers was announced? I think if you flip them, the temperature is very different amongst the fans. I think Red Hot Chili Peppers could play it on its own. And for whatever reason, they were
well,
a special
it made
guest.
No sense. When you watched the actual halftime show, when the Chili Peppers popped out, it was like, what is this? This is nonsensical.
Right.
It's obviously, you know, some sort of weird demographic programming idea that doesn't work at all. And Bruno Mars was fine.
Right.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift, we can't get Taylor Swift to do this thing?
I think Taylor Swift is too big for the Super Bowl. She doesn't need it, you know? Like it's,
nothing is too big for the Super Bowl.
She's post-Super Bowl.
Katy Perry last year.
Adele?
No, Adele's
not,
too...
Not quite the right mood.
No.
We've never had a pure hip-hop
right
halftime act.
But
we've had hip-hop performers guest, but we've never had... I thought last year, you know, I mean, 2 years ago when you had it in New York, Jay-Z would have been a great halftime show.
He would.
They wouldn't go for it.
No.
Also, Jay-Z's, you know, canon of music, it's excellent, but is it, you know, middle America, wholesome?
Also, yeah, and I don't know, the Super Bowl is just
Kanye?
Your, is just
Kanye
your four or five biggest hits.
Kanye West would be phenomenal.
Yes.
That would be a great halftime show.
Right, that
but
would.
The unfortunate thing is it would run 45 minutes long, and the teams would be sitting there in the runway waiting to come out, and Kanye would be talking.
Right.
He would also play no hits. You know, it would be like this weird... It would be like when McCartney kind of did that. Springsteen did that a little bit, where he opened with 10th Avenue Freeze Out, and it's like, was someone going to play Born in the USA here?
Yeah.
You know, McCartney played Drive My Car and Get Back. You know, he played Hey Jude, I guess, to close it out. But I think that you need... I think the NFL needs these sort of Katy Perry types who are going to play their five biggest hits and then get the hell off the stage.
Bon Jovi's time has come and gone.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, also, he's tried to buy a couple
teams.
He's
too ingrained in the NFL, too. Yeah, he's sort of like a quasi-owner.
Yeah.
Can you bring U2 back? Or is everyone over U2 at this point?
I think they're over U2. I think when they started putting their album on our iPhones without us asking for them, that was the moment when...
Well, who's left?
Oh,
let's get Oasis back together. Come on, guys.
Wait, there's a big outstanding one which would be a huge hit, and that would be Pearl Jam. Pearl Jam would be fantastic.
A friend of mine said that the and it was really true, it's like the epitome of a Super Bowl halftime show is a band that never played the Super Bowl halftime, but it's Queen. Like Queen
right.
is the,
yes.
the that is the perfect Super Bowl halftime show. So basically you look for degrees of Queen. Like who can be
right.
like match that kind of I mean they would have been amazing,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Absolutely
right.
perfect. I mean they play Queen nonstop in every stadium in the world.
Including We Are the Champions at the Orange Bowl, even
right.
though they weren't, no one was a champion.
Even
there,
though
by
it was
the
semifinal.
Yeah.
All right, well, so we're not really looking forward to Coldplay. I want to.
Foo Fighters?
you know
yes,
what?
Foo Fighters would be great.
Foo Fighters, Kevin,
would
that's
you,
a good one.
Would you rather have Foo Fighters or Pearl Jam?
Oh, not Pearl Jam.
That's
Pearl Jam
Fighters.
Is too esoteric at this
what?
Point.
Foo Fighters have
yeah.
more
what?
Catchy radio.
As
hits
someone,
than,
as yeah. someone who has to yeah. pay a lot of money to go see Pearl Jam twice a year, I would say that their fan base is extremely large.
I don't disagree with that, but so is Fishes. You're not looking for some sort of rabid fan base. You're looking for, you know, a poppy, catchy show.
Universally
and I don't think
liked.
That,
right.
I think the Foo Fighters do that, and I don't think the Pearl Jam does. All right. I just want to wrap and talk to you guys about this pet peeve topic of mine, which is the New Year's Eve college football playoff, which, you know, I don't throw this word around lightly. But disastrous, disastrous from a television rating standpoint.
Well,
they were
50%
off.
Really.
But yeah, the games were terrible. But two things come to mind. First of all, there was so much to love about this because it's the classic college football industry hubris that yep. created this condition where they had an opportunity to move the games. ESPN was actually coming to them and saying, "Hey, listen, push this to January 2nd, Saturday. It's a clear day. You're not going to interrupt the Rose Bowl." And they're like, no, we're going to create a new tradition. And this whole run out of like, it's going to be a new American tradition in New Year's Eve college football playoff. And you know, you get four pretty decent teams with followings. Clemson, maybe not exactly a, you know, a household name team, but it just flatlines. It doesn't do anywhere near the number. And whatever they said, the nonsense they said the next day about like, oh, they expected a drop off and like that's what happens first, 45%. Second year to first. That's not true at all. You don't have a drop. You're supposed to build. The whole point of television is build. And
right.
the cord cutting percentage is not that. but that part I love. But also like New Year's Eve, sneaky American holiday. People actually do stuff. Like, you know, right. It's very popular to rain all over
this
New Year's Eve as a holiday. I don't like it. I don't go out.
Right.
But we had people over. And
I saw this coming a million miles away. You know, there is no way that I would be able to persuade my wife to spend New Year's Eve sitting in front of the TV watching college football for
eight hours.
I mean, it's just absurd. Yeah. So, you know, and so, of course, this was bound to happen. I mean, everyone hates New Year's Eve, but no one wants to spend New Year's Eve sitting in front of the
TV. I'll tell you a
TV.
Phenomenon that I encountered, which was I was in Washington, D.C. My girlfriend was able to come down for New Year's Eve. I was reporting on aforementioned Redskins. And because I was so frustrated with it and because I knew I couldn't watch all of the 8 hours, I didn't watch any of it. So in the 20, 30 minutes when I could have watched it, I just didn't want to partake. Yeah. I just wanted to opt out of the entire thing.
Yeah.
And that was – I think people are just so frustrated by it that –
it's fun to, you know, point the finger at college football for their sort of ridiculous hubristic attitude to this whole thing. But – it's such a shame because the semifinals last year were so great and the whole thing was such a hit, and it seemed like it all made so much sense to make college, you know, New Year's Day, you know, which has long been the college football day, stick the semifinals on there. It was great.
This is the thing. New Year's Day is a perfect day for watching football. It is the greatest day for watching football because you know, you've stayed up late the night before. Maybe you had a little too much to drink. You're eating greasy food. You're lingering
that
around the house.
That is a day to sit on the couch for hours on end.
It is.
It's the perfect day for it.
You're doing it no matter what. And so it was a double whammy this year, which you had the most important games were on New Year's Eve, which you didn't watch. And then the next day, you have inconsequential games happening. Now, I know people get excited for the Rose Bowl and stuff like that, but you had that insane TCU-Oregon game that was...
Oh, incredible. Absolutely incredible.
But still inconsequential in the grand scheme of things and a real letdown. Now, here's my wonderment here, my question, which is that we all know the reason why this actually happened. It's because when the playoff was pitched to the bowl committees, and especially the all-powerful Rose Bowl Committee, which is the most powerful sports organization on the planet, they said one of the ways they're going to sell this is you're going to create this rotation where the semifinals would rotate among the games, but you also would not have to give up your time slot. The Rose Bowl loved being on at 5 o'clock Eastern in Pasadena January 1st every year, and they were assured that they would not have to give this up.
In fairness, I think that the contract they had signed with ESPN before the college football playoff was created stipulated that they would remain on New Year's
Day.
Same with
the Sugar Bowl.
But the rule of all contracts is that contracts are breakable, and we both know that the greatest Rose Bowl ever played was not played on January 1st. It was the Rose Bowl that happened 10 years ago today on January 4th when you had Texas play USC. So it wasn't like they were completely fixed into the idea of January 1st. They're just fixed into the idea of being all-powerful and important. And so my question is, can ESPN and this bowl committee, do they have the clout to basically call the bluff and say, you know what, we're never doing this again. This was a stupid idea. And these things are effectively television shows. No matter what anyone tells you about fan loyalty and bases and, you know, tribalism in American sport, college football as it exists in 2016 is a television show. End of story. And the God almighty purpose of television is to achieve the most desirable rating. And so you're going to lay that down 3 out of 4 years because of some quirky bunch of guys who don't want to have seed control?
Yes.
I mean, why can't you just go to them and say, tough,
so
sue us?
I think two things. I think it will be very interesting to see what happens next year because New Year's Eve is on a Saturday next year, I believe. So they won't run into the issue of people working on the day and being unable to watch the early game.
But I think the attrition is what you were talking about, which is that people are socializing.
But what I will say is if ESPN decides that they are unwilling to accept the current situation, I'm pretty sure that they can tell college football whatever they do because they basically finance the whole sport of college football.
But they did it this year, and they weren't able to get a resolution.
But I think that if they put their foot down and demand that this happens, I think that they will probably be able to get their way.
Well, and the other part of it is now they do have some data to come back and say, like, this doesn't work.
Right.
And also, the other thing, too, is people say, oh, well, you know, Saturday, you know, New Year's Eve Saturday, it's not such a big deal because, you know, people won't be working as much. But, you know, Saturday nights are Davy Jones' locker for television in general. Right. That's where you put your worst performing programming historically. It's not a place where you find good stuff. And here's my other cosmic question about this, though. Okay. What if this had been, just theoretically, the AFC and the NFC championship had been on New Year's Eve, double bill? I think it would have been a huge ratings. I think people just, they can't not deal with their NFL.
Yes.
Now, would it have been the same level as what it is when it's the third weekend of January on a Sunday? No. But I don't think you would have had the crazy attrition. And I wonder if this also points to one of my pet topics, is that college sports, for as big as they are not as big as their proponents suggest they are in America. They're big, but they're not sell the house, get rid of the kids, I have to see it big.
Yeah, I mean, yes.
It's regional.
It's regional. It's not as big as the NFL, obviously. But I don't know, if it were Saban against Urban Meyer, like on, you know, if it had been that sort of matchup, what's something that people could, you know, naturally gravitate towards?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it would have done better.
Yeah. So I've been out of pocket on both semifinal days now. And I would say that when Alabama and Ohio State were playing, you would see people go out of their way to watch on their phone, or if they're walking by a bar, stop and look for 5 seconds. I saw none of that.
That was also a great game.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It was a 21-6 at the half, Alabama, and they came back and the whole thing. And yeah, the games were better. But I don't know. It's fascinating. It's my favorite topic, collision of money and sport and demographics. And, you know, at some point, these things are just going to be played in Burbank, California, and they're going to cast the teams, and they're going to be, you know, what's the point, right? Well, we'll leave you on that optimistic note. Guys.
Are we not making Super Bowl predictions?
Oh.
Oh, God.
I forgot. Yes. Clegula.
Steelers, Seahawks.
Oh, yeah, the Clegg special.
The number 6 seeds collide.
You can't leave it there, Clegg.
We already had
that. You can't leave it there.
We already had Steelers,
and,
Seahawks.
And the Seahawks will win.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm calling it.
Oh, okay, so a couple days ago, my girlfriend said, who's going to be at the Super Bowl? And I said, Cardinals, Patriots. And she said, I was talking about reporters. But it was... and that was my haphazard guess, and I will stick with it. Cardinals and Patriots.
Jason.
And the Patriots will win.
The Patriots will win?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's the one thing that I'm pretty sure is not going to happen, unfortunately. I am going to say... Carolina is going to win the Super Bowl, and they're going to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers.
You like the Steelers too?
Or the Denver Broncos. Just to be different, I'm going to say the Panthers over the Broncos.
All right.
And I think the Patriots are going to rue that home field thing because, you know, Denver will end up winning that game in Mile High or whatever the heck it is. Call it now. What is it called now, Kevin?
Sports Authority Field.
At Mile High.
At Mile High.
Okay. This has been the free-for-all. This has been the football free-for-all. Thank you very much for listening. Tune in next week when we laugh at all the things that we said on this episode. And thank you very much, as always, for listening.
Hear more shows at wsj.com/podcasts.